It's time for the Rink Rats with your hosts, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats, Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger. We were talking before we turned these microphones on, and Jesse was telling me an interesting story, which I just felt was too good. We had to get it on the podcast. It has nothing to do with hockey, so if you only tune in for the hockey and you don't care about Jesse Granger as a person, you can fast forward this.
Which I wouldn't blame you for.
Which is fine, because you hate people, and people probably hate you back. So yep. That all being said, let's get into it, Jesse. You have a couple of cuts, some bruises on your hand. You look like you've been in a bar fight. What happened?
All right, so I have two cats.
But explain your cats.
One is a normal, white, short hair. It's a fat, round little cat with like black spots on him. Normal looking cat.
Sure.
That's my girlfriend's cat. And then I have my cat, which is an Egyptian Sphinx cat, which, if you don't know, it's Mr. Bigglesworth from Austin Powers. He has no fur.
The creepiest looking creature I've ever seen in my entire life.
They're unique. They're very unique.
Unique's
really very expensive. I had to drive a long way to get him.
Did you have to smuggle it across state lines?
I did.
Really?
Not smuggle. I had to bring him across state lines legally.
What's his name?
His name is Heisenberg.
Oh, nice.
Off of the meth dealer on Breaking Bad, because he
looks
is
like,
bald.
Yeah, he looks like Walter White. I got it.
He's Heisenberg. Mm-hmm. So, great cat. Coolest cat ever. So, anyways, the other night, a couple nights ago, I'm hanging out, smoking hookah. I have the door open at my house so that the screen door is closed. And I'm in the kitchen, and I hear my cat screeching. Like, louder than I've ever heard a cat make a noise in my life.
Yep.
And I'm like, what the hell? I come running around the corner. I think he's like, something fell on him. He got hurt or something. No, he's taunting a stray cat that's on the other side of the door through the screen.
Oh, man. Okay.
So he wants to kill him.
Sure.
When I come running in, the stray cat sees me and hauls ass out of there. So now my cat is just like on edge, like worked up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at the worst possible moment, the other cat comes walking around the corner into the living room. Now, these cats are friends. They love each other. But his like natural instinct to just kill a cat kicks in, and he starts like running at the other cat, and now they are about to have like a battle royale.
Sure.
And I'm like, I feel bad for the other cat, because like it did nothing to deserve this.
Right.
So I run and try to pick my cat up. Worst decision I've ever made in my entire life.
Never do that.
Like, I'll play with my cat all the time, like just messing around with him, and like he bites me and claws me, and like you think, like, I can tell he's kind of holding back. I'm like, he's probably at like 75% right now.
Sure.
I severely underestimated how strong this cat is.
It's like your assessment of the Golden Knights.
Yeah, exactly. He's actually like 10% strength when he's playing with me, because this cat used the strength of 1,000 suns, ripped me apart. There was blood dripping from my arm. I had to kick him. So he clawed me, and now he's like going back for the other cat. So I'm like having to like not really kick him, but like nudge him along with my foot all the way into like a room, and then just locked him in there until he calmed down. Meanwhile, I have to like go run and like put hydrogen peroxide on my hand, and I bled all over the wall. My girlfriend comes home. She's like, oh my God, there's blood on the wall. What happened? It looked like a horror scene. So that's what happened in my house the other day. I almost got killed by my own naked cat.
I question one part of this story. You said when your girlfriend's cat came into the room, that your cat and your girlfriend's cat love each other. Are cats capable of love? Because I don't think so. They are heathens. They are like, and I'm a big animal guy. Like, I love dogs. I'm a big animal guy. I don't eat animals. Like, that's a thing I don't do. But
you don't eat animals?
I don't eat animals.
You're a vegetarian?
I'm a vegan. We've never gotten into this.
Wow, I never knew that.
Real Kid Poker and I, we have that in common. We don't eat animals.
Wow. You don't eat a hamburger?
No. Well, I eat hamburgers. I just don't eat cow's burgers. Like, I don't eat meat from cows.
Okay, that's not a hamburger.
No, it is.
So you eat like a black
bean. Like, you got to roll with me up to Fat Burger, and I'll get you an Impossible Burger.
Oh,
you'll understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's fine. No big deal.
I did not know that.
I know. I don't advertise it. I'm not that guy that to make it weird or awkward for anybody else.
You're like the only vegan on Earth that doesn't make it annoying that you're vegan.
I like to be a little bit different. And I wanted to preface that by saying, I didn't want to just completely shit all over cats, but I find them to be awful. I find cats to be incredibly awful. And it's not just because every time I've had a cat or have cared for a cat or been around a cat, I've ended up with claw marks and scratches all over my body and face, and it's just the worst. But that's exactly what happens every single time. I think they're heathens. They don't love. They look at you as if they want to figure out a way to kill you.
My cat almost did figure that out.
I know, and you should be afraid because that's his instinct. And I think that
terrifying.
One day your cat is just going to, you're going to wake up one day. You're just literally going to wake up, and he's going to be on top of you, and you're going to know that it's your time.
I have heard that if you, like, say you have, like, say you, like, live alone and you have a dog.
Yeah.
If you die, that dog will be, like, sad and, like, lay by your body and then, like, maybe, like, try to go get help or something.
Sure.
I've heard, this is not, I've just heard, like, this is, like, one of those, like, wives' tales or, like, a myth or whatever.
I'm a little worried of where this is going.
Apparently, a cat, if you die, will eat your face.
Okay. There we go.
Not, like, obviously, like, it has to survive, so it needs to eat something, so it's going to have to eat. But, like, I've heard that they prefer to eat your face.
Did I ever tell you the story of how my wife rescued our cat?
You have a cat?
We have a cat. Yeah, I've got two dogs and a cat.
Oh.
Okay, so this came at a time where we didn't want any more animals. And my wife knows this, but she was pregnant with my son. She was on her way to work. And we live over on the by Blue Diamond in Decatur area. And my wife ends up about to get on the 15 at Blue Diamond, and she just sees this car swerve and this cat dart across Blue Diamond. And so she stops, and a trucker stops, and he stops blocking traffic. And here's my, like, 6-month pregnant wife running out of the car, bless her soul, to go save this cat. And the cat actually ends up running around her car and then lodging himself in the wheel well of her car.
Oh, yeah.
So the trucker that stopped traffic, he came, he helped her out, and she was like, and he was like, hey, I've got to go. I can't take this cat. Can you take him to the vet or figure out something to do with him? So my wife ends up calling in. Like, she comes home, and then she's like, so you can't get mad at me. There was this cat that got run over, like, his tail's all kinked. I think there's a problem. Like, we need to take him to the vet. I'm like, okay, that's fine. So we go to the vet. We check him out. Everything's fine. We bring him home because we didn't really want to surrender him. We wanted to try to find him a home, right? So, like, 3 days later, my daughter calls me up at work. And she's like, hey, we've got a name for the cat.
Oh,
and this is before,
it's yours now.
And this is before the Golden Knights, like, played hockey or anything like that. So my daughter is like, we're naming him King. And I'm like, well, damn it. I guess we've got a cat.
Yeah.
And that's been the story ever since.
So your cat's name is King.
His name is King, yeah. Yep. It's great. I love him.
Now I see why you hate cats.
No. God, he's a pain in the ass. That's all I'm going to say.
I love my cat.
I'm sure
it's
you
a
do.
Great
I mean, like, do you have dogs?
I've had dogs in my life. I don't
have
dogs now.
You don't have a dog
now?
No. Yeah. You should get a dog. They're better.
They're awesome. They're work. Dogs, you have to walk. Mm-hmm. You have to, like, clean up their crap out of the backyard. Like, you have to, they're constantly needing attention. Like, a cat is, like, so easy. Like, it gets attention when you want it to, and then, like, the rest of the time, it's just, like, very self-sufficient. It's significantly less work to take care
of
a
favorite
cat.
Part of this entire conversation is just watching Ari make these hand gestures and nods and, like, yeah, I love cats. Cats are awesome. And then it's like, yeah, but cats are jerks too. Like, he's all on the fence on this.
You guys make some good points. No, I love cats, but I agree about the dogs. They're very, it's a lot of work, a lot of attention.
Dogs are fun, though.
They're rambunctious.
Like, yeah, but they love you. Like, I question every single cat whether or not they want to kill me.
Yeah.
Every single one.
I think that I see what you're saying with some cats. My cat is, like, basically acts like a dog. Like, it sits on my lap. It never leaves me. Like, from the second I get in the house to the second I leave, mm-hmm. wherever I go, it's on me. It sleeps on me. When I'm sleeping in bed, it sleeps on top of me.
So is your cat a hockey fan?
Yes.
Okay, nice. Maybe I like him a little bit more.
So let's transition into what this podcast is supposed to be about.
Is that what they're telling us?
The thing
us?
Is, this is what happens when the Golden Knights go 5 months between playoff series and refuse to announce the second round playoff dates.
Can we just talk about that really, really quickly? It is Tuesday. We're recording this on a Tuesday. It's going to come out. This episode is going to come out on a Wednesday.
You still probably won't know.
Presumably, It has been reported, it has been talked about, it has been discussed in the media circle in Vegas that game one will be on Thursday.
Yeah.
It is Tuesday at 1 o'clock and there is still no schedule. Like, and it's not like, I mean, I get it. We know it's imminent. We know it's coming. We knew that it was probably going to be on Thursday if there was a game seven. Although there has been times in the past where game one will start on the same day as a game seven.
Which is what they should have
done. Which is what they should have done, because I would have just preferred it that way. But here's my issue. My day job is not podcaster, is not on-air host. It is something a little bit more specific within the radio station confines that makes it so that I have to plan people to be certain places at certain times with, you know, advance notice. I've got to tell people, oh, hey, you don't have Thursday off anymore, or you don't have Friday off anymore, or, oh, hey, we're going to switch the time. Like, there are a lot of moving parts on my day job that this is screwing up, because we do a lot with the Golden Knights, and we do a lot of broadcasts and stuff like that. So I'm just complaining from that aspect. Like, the media side of me doesn't really care that much.
My media side of me, I have to book a plane ticket to San Jose.
Well, there's that, too. Like, that's another aspect of
and
it for me.
And a hotel room.
Yeah, it sucks all
San
the way
Jose
around.
Is expensive.
I honestly...
$350 one-way flight to San Jose.
Airbnb it.
The hotels are kind of bad. It's the flights that are the expensive part.
To be honest with you, I haven't taken care of any of that. I'm not supposed to take care of any of it. So I just assume that that'll be all taken care of for me. We'll see what ends up happening.
Not assume that.
Well, you know what, man? I've got a lot on my plate right now. Yeah. So...
Eventually.
Is it the NHL or is it NBC? Because I put out a tweet earlier today where I was just like, you know, I think you have to, like, logic dictates that you would assume before game one, the NHL will release a schedule. And I've heard people talk about, well, it's not the NHL, it's NBC. Is it NBC? Because
no.
I don't think it is. I think it's the NHL.
No, NBC does not take precedent over the NHL. This, like, TV is obviously really important, but in the end, this is a league trying to determine a champion. They're going to come out with a schedule whenever the hell they want.
That's true.
It's not. They're NBC. Plus, if I was the NHL, I would not be doing NBC any favors, because they are horrendous at scheduling these games and putting them on the right channels. There's like, games on the golf channel.
What about?
There's games on USA.
What about, like, I don't remember if it was New Jersey, Tampa, and Philadelphia, Pittsburgh that was scheduled at the exact same time on a weekend day, where you could literally, all you've got to do is go 12 o'clock start, 3 o'clock start,
yep.
7 o'clock start. You get to actually watch all the games. Like, the scheduling of this sport is the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
It's like they're intentionally trying to lose money.
Yeah, I think
so. If you told me, how can you make the least amount of money with two playoff games? I would say, put them on at the same exact time,
right,
on two obscure-ass channels that no one can find or has ever heard of, and that will make you the least amount of money. And the NHL's like, perfect, let's do that.
Yeah. No, Gary Bettman's like, yeah, well, if I knew that this was going to happen when I boycotted the Olympics, maybe I'd have changed it.
It's like, I don't... Like, when, if there's a Tampa Bay, New Jersey game on, and then there's a Boston, Toronto game on, what percentage of people that watched the Tampa Bay, New Jersey game are not going to watch the following game that comes on right after it?
No, I mean...
All of them,
yeah,
are.
Everybody.
97%
like,
of
if
them.
If you're a hockey fan, you don't want to have to choose. If there's three games on a Saturday, don't want to have to choose between watching one game and watching another game and then having a three-hour break before the third game starts.
It's so stupid.
You just want to watch hockey all day.
Yeah, so...
I don't get it. So, that all being said, we have pretty much the entire picture of the second round, with the exception of one series. Boston-Toronto is going to go seven. We'll get into that in a minute. But before we get into the second round, let's get into the second round. Let's start with San Jose, and let's start with Vegas. Now, I really think when I'm looking at this, the best case scenario for San Jose is that Joe Thornton isn't going to be ready for games 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7. Because I don't think Joe Thornton can skate with the Vegas Golden Knights. I think you put him out there, you're taking away a player that has some speed, that has the ability to skate with this team, that can make it at least a little bit competitive speed for speed, And I understand his accolades. I understand how good of a playmaker he is. But if he's not going to have the puck anyway, he's not going to make plays.
I think 5-on-5, he's a liability.
Yes.
I think the one part that he may boost San Jose if he's in the lineup is on the power play, because you don't have to skate on the power play. San Jose is really good at gaining the zone, and then, and I'll talk about it more in depth later or whenever we get to it, but I think the key to this series is they're shooting from the point and trying to deflect it past Fleury.
Mm-hmm.
And Thornton's really good at that. One of the best, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's a big body. If he parks in front, he's a big body that can get his stick on pucks. But he's also the type of guy that can go down below the goal line,
mm-hmm.
possess the puck. He's got enough strength, enough you know, elusiveness to get around some guys to hold on to the pucks and then open up those low to high seams.
Yeah.
And he's an excellent passer to make that happen. But the question then becomes, if you take, I mean, where do you pull from the lineup?
Yeah,
to insert him is number one.
They're playing really well. I mean, obviously,
they are.
They swept just like the Golden Knights did. I mean, they're playing well.
And two, is the amount of time Joe Thornton's going to play on the power play, is that going to equal out or create an advantage over the times he's going to be a liability 5-on-5?
Yeah, that's for DeBoer to decide.
And that's a scary prospect if I'm San Jose, because if you're Pete DeBoer and Joe Thornton's ready to go, do you have the balls to sit him?
No. I don't think he does. I don't think anybody in that organization
does. But you have
does.
To. I think you have to.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
look at the LA Kings, right? Now, San Jose is a faster team top to bottom than the LA Kings.
Much faster.
Much faster. But if you insert Joe Thornton into the lineup, that immediately makes for a situation in which you will probably lose possession 5-on-5.
Yeah.
Every single time he's out there on the ice. Every time.
Yeah, I mean, he's a slower guy. I mean, he's, what, 187 years old?
He's old.
His beard makes him look about 30 years older than he really is, because, damn, his beard is white.
Right. It's. I mean, like, it doesn't have the same effect as Brent Burns' beard. Like Joe Thornton, like, he wears his age on his facial hair.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
You know? So, let's look at a couple of the players from San Jose. Obviously, the big pickup, Evander Kane.
He's been massive.
He's been amazing. And it's speed, it's shot, it's playing with good players, it's putting himself in the right situations. What effect does Evander Kane have on this series? I think that he can bring a lot of things that are going to frustrate the Golden Knights defense if he can get in on the forecheck and lay a couple of hits.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's the forecheck.
Mm-hmm.
The Golden Knights, when they have struggled this season, which hasn't been often, mm-hmm. but it's been turning the puck over in their own zone. If you go back and look at every goal they gave up this year, I would guess the majority of them came off of a turnover. And as well as their defense played against LA, I still think if there's a weakness on this team, it's the defensemen. And there are certain pairings that struggle to move the puck. And if you can get Kane in there and just pressure him and just suffocate them, force them to make decisions faster than they want to, mm-hmm. that's how San Jose scores.
And I think that San Jose is interesting in that they have a good mix of speed on all four lines.
They do. Their fourth line scored 4 goals, I think, mm-hmm. against Anaheim. They have one of the only fourth lines in the NHL that can even come close to matching the Golden Knights. That's going to be a fascinating part of the series, is how those fourth lines match up against each other.
And then you were talking a little bit on Twitter about Brent Burns, about the defense of San Jose and what they're going to have to do in order to stop the Vegas Golden Knights, not only their forecheck, but their ability to move in transition, to create turnovers, to get in and frustrate you into mistakes. Mark-Edward Vlasic is going to be one of those big guys that's going to need to shut down the Carlson line. We've seen that Drew Doughty was able to contain that line a little bit. They still got some opportunities. They still scored some big goals. But what is Brent Burns, what is Mark-Edward Vlasic, what are those guys going to have to do differently than Drew Doughty did to completely shut that line down?
Yeah, well, the difference is, I think the Kings, it was their forwards that helped mm-hmm. shut Carlson mm-hmm. down. It was Kopitar.
Yep.
And Dustin Brown did a decent enough job. And Toffoli. I follow all those guys. They did a decent job. I think with the Sharks, it's going to have to be more defensemen, and we've said it. As dangerous as Burns is on the offensive end, and mm-hmm. I looked it up, because remember, he had a slow start to the season, but he had 12 points in their last 10 games to end the season, and then I think 2 points in the 4 games in the playoffs. Yep. He's playing really, really well right now, but as good and dangerous as he is on offense, he gives up plays on the back end because he's so aggressive. Mm-hmm. I think Brent Burns skates well enough. He's a big guy. He's got great hands. I think if you told Brent Burns, you don't have to make any offensive plays, just play defense, he'd be amazing at it.
Right.
The problem is, that's not his priority.
Yeah, and you can't change that. You can't change it in the playoffs.
It's Shea Theodore. He's just a much better Shea Theodore.
Right.
I think Shea Theodore skates faster, so he's able to kind of... how many times a game does Theodore get caught out of position and you think, here we go.
Yeah.
But then he's fast enough to catch up and get back in. And Erik Karlsson does the same thing. Gets caught out of position all the time.
And I think that's probably the main difference right now between Brent Burns and Shea Theodore, because they both make some risky reads. They both do things that they genuinely think are the right play in the right moment. But Shea Theodore gets back more often than Brent Burns does. Brent Burns, when he's beaten, if it's bad, if he's really caught below the hashes, he can't get back. He's too big of a guy to be able to make up that much ground. And it's even more evident when he plays the Golden Knights. Because you look at some of the goals that have been scored against San Jose, specifically when Brent Burns is on the ice in the season series, and you realize one pinch, one bad read, and it's going to end up in the back of your net. And that kind of goes on to something that we talked about in the last podcast, is Martin Jones and his ability not only to read the plays as they develop, but his ability to move laterally and understand what he really needs to do, where he needs to put his body. That's the only aspect I think that Martin Jones doesn't have to push him from good to great or great to solid or outstanding or whatever it is. The Golden Knights offense is built for beating a goalie that does not move great laterally.
Yeah, and I think you can count on one hand probably how many odd man rushes the Golden Knights had against the Kings in the entire series.
Yeah, it wasn't
much. It
just
didn't happen. Mm-mm. It's going to happen in this Shark series. And if I'm Gallant, I'm telling the forwards, jump those passes.
Mm-hmm.
The Sharks offense is very basic. What they do is they cycle the puck down low.
Mm-hmm.
They set up their offense in the zone. They immediately do whatever they can to get the puck to the points, whether it's Vlasic or Braun or Burns, preferably Burns, obviously. Yep. Get as much traffic as they can in front of the goalie and fire away. If you can jump those passes, and Karlsson did it on his shorthanded goal, the between the legs, obviously that the between the legs part gets all the glory, but that was a great read by him to see that pass coming, poke the puck out of the around Burns, essentially outskate him and go score that amazing goal. But if I'm Gallant, I'm telling my guys, jump those.
Yep.
Don't be conservative. Go for it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And that's what we're going to see. It's the tale of two offenses, right? Like it's grind it out. It's get the puck down low. It's use your size. And again, this isn't taking away the fact that San Jose is a fast team. They are infinitely faster than the Los Angeles Kings. But once they get in on the forecheck, create a little bit of havoc, get a turnover, everything that they do is going to be down low on the cycle until they can find a point man open and get traffic to the front of the net like you were talking about. Now, for Marc-Andre Fleury, how different is that going to be for him based on what we saw out of Los Angeles? Which, and let's be honest, Los Angeles didn't do very much on the offensive side of things.
That's a perfect transition. This is like why they pay you to do radio.
Sometimes.
I was literally about to say, we talked about how the Golden Knights offense is built to beat Jones. The Sharks offense is built to beat Fleury.
Yep.
Especially, well, any goalie that's on like he's on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way Fleury is playing, you're not going to beat him with a shot.
Right.
It didn't happen in 4 games against the Kings. And there's no like sniper on the Sharks that is going to, there's no Ovechkin that's just going to snipe him.
Pavelski's close.
Pavelski or Couture. I mean,
and maybe Kane too. Kane's got a good enough shot, I think, to beat Fleury clean.
So what I'm getting at is the way you beat Fleury is with traffic and with tips. That's how the Kings score. Well, the one was Nate Schmidt screwed up and gave Kopitar a wide open pass to Iafallo.
It was Iafallo. Yeah.
So there's that one. But then the other two were a deflection by Kopitar and then the one that went off Derek England.
Sure.
That's how they're going to beat him. So the Sharks led the NHL this season with 98 shots on goal that came off a deflection.
Wow.
Huh. That's a lot.
It's good stat.
They also led the league with 19 goals coming off deflections. And as a goalie, if that once the deflection happens, you it's out of your control.
Right.
It either hits you or it's a goal. There is no time to react. And Fleury's not a big guy. A guy like Ben Bishop is great for great for stopping deflections. You're just big. You just take up more of the net.
Yeah.
Fleury uses his reactions. That's what makes him such a good goalie, and the deflections take that out of the equation. And I talked to him today in practice, and I was like, obviously this rest is not great. This team is going to put a bunch of traffic in front of you and try to reflect it. How hard is that to simulate in practice? Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, you're 100% right. It's impossible.
Yeah.
You can't simulate it in practice. He's like, we do some drills where we get a guy in front of me, but there's going to be five guys in front of me.
Exactly.
And they're bumping me and being physical with me. And I was talking to him like, It was a very cool conversation. I was asking him, like, how do you balance pushing the guy in the back? Because Fleury loves using his, like,
being stick
physical.
Work. Yeah, he's good at it.
Fleury loves using his catcher to push him away and kind of jabbing at their skates with his stick to get him away from him.
Yeah.
I was like, how do you balance that and making sure, because if you're doing that when they shoot, you're dead in the water. And
right.
He's like, oh, it's a fun game, blah, blah, blah. I have to time it. Every time I know they can't take a shot, I like to give the guy a little push. But So I don't want to make it sound like Fleury's not good at seeing through traffic. I think he's really good at it. He's significant. That's like one area where Subban is way behind Fleury, is seeing through traffic, and Fleury does a good job. But when a goalie's as good as he is right now, that's the only way to beat them, is with deflections, and that just happens to be what San Jose is better at than any team in the NHL.
So traffic in front versus speed in transition, moving laterally, what's going to win out and why?
I think the Golden Knights are just better. I mean, I think you're right. That is kind of the matchup. It's who, like, the Golden Knights are going to try to score with two-on-ones.
Mm-hmm.
The Sharks are going to try to get the puck deep, get it to the points, blast it, and hope for messy goals. And I do think the Golden Knights can get their share of messy goals, too. Alex Tuch was amazing in the first round, and he's probably going to continue that. But I just think, more than that, I just think the Golden Knights are just better. I think their forwards are better. I think their defensemen aren't as good, but it's close. And I think the goaltending is a significant advantage for Vegas.
Yeah, when I look at San Jose, outside of Brent Burns, Vlasic, and Braun, I mean, obviously that's half your defensive core right there. But when you look at names like Paul Martin or DeMello, it doesn't really instill a whole ton of confidence. That being said, I do think that Vegas as a whole, their defense as a whole, is probably more complete from a talent aspect. You've got the high end, and then you've got some guys that you're a little bit afraid every single time they get on the ice for San Jose.
I would agree that the Golden Knights' depth on defense is better, but if you ask me right now, you're starting a team. Do you want all of San Jose's defenders or Golden Knights? It's tough to pass up Burns and Vlasic, and Braun's good too. I mean, they've got good defense. But the forwards, I think the Golden Knights have a huge advantage.
And I want to talk about that really quick. With Alex Tuch playing as a legitimate top six forward, that slides David Perron into that third line, and he's been a great influence on Cody Eakin, on Ryan Carpenter. How important is it that is how your lineup stays, that Perron is able to bring that aspect of his game, his ability to hold on to the puck, his ability to make guys around him better? How important is it going to be for that third line to be the third line that plays this entire series?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I could see them moving Perron back with his old line mates and Tuch back down there, and I think Tuch could do just as good. But the way it is right now, if Perron has a good series, if at the end of this series you're saying, man, David Perron was good, the Golden Knights win. I see no scenario in which David Perron has a good series on the third line and the Golden Knights lose. It can't be done. Physically impossible.
No, I think that's fair.
Because like I said, San Jose can match up with the Golden Knights' fourth line. Their fourth line actually is a higher scoring, a higher producing line than the Golden Knights' fourth line. They don't forecheck as well, But and then the top two lines, I think, are gonna. I think the Golden Knights have an advantage, but I could see San Jose, if those guys step up and play really well, I could see San Jose matching. The third line is where I think the Golden Knights have a big advantage with Eakin, Perron, and Carpenter. That's way more than what San Jose's got. Mm-hmm. And if Perron plays really well, that third line all of a sudden becomes 2B.
Yeah, I completely agree. So I'm picking Golden Knights. I'm picking them as much as I want to say in five because I don't want to actually do another trip to San Jose. I think it's probably going to go six.
I have them in five.
Really? Really, in five?
I just don't think... And I said I didn't think the Kings would be that difficult.
Yeah.
I don't think the Sharks... it's not because I'm that high and think that this Golden Knights team is like one of the all-time greats. I think the Pacific Division just sucks.
Yeah, it's not good.
They just suck. The Golden Knights are just better than them. I don't think the Sharks are good. I think if the Sharks had to play Winnipeg or Nashville, they'd get beaten 4 or 5-2. I just don't think they're very good. I think... That series, by the way, is going to be a freaking amazing series.
Do you have any more on Vegas right now?
No, I think we're good.
Good? Okay.
It's going to be fun.
Let's get into Winnipeg and Nashville.
Favorite series of the playoffs.
God, I can't wait. And like, we deserve this, right? Because we suffered through one of the worst opening rounds in recent memory. I mean, thank God the Toronto Maple Leafs handled business. And we have a game seven to look forward to, and we have that drama to look forward to. Yes, it's kind of screwing us on the schedule aspect of things, but at least we can say one series went the distance, and it was one of those series that didn't seem like it was going to.
Well, but when we went into things, remember, we both said, like, that, like we said a month ago when we thought that we might get that series, that's like the best series of the first round. And it's unfortunate because the way that the NHL has its playoffs set up, which is unbelievably stupid. Mm-hmm. Another thing that they can't do right.
Yeah. Like most things that they can't do right.
It sucks that there's Tampa Bay, mm-hmm. and then right behind Tampa Bay is Boston and Toronto, are the second and third best teams in the entire Eastern Conference. Mm-hmm. And one of them is going to be eliminated don't deserve to be.
Yeah, it's a joke.
Meanwhile, Washington is in the second round when either of those teams would crush Washington.
Washington has home ice advantage.
It's ridiculous.
And Toronto doesn't. In spite of the fact that Toronto finished with more points, more wins, everything than Washington. It's a joke.
But anyways, if there's going to be a series in the first round that we're going to get seven games of, I'm glad it's this one. Mm-hmm. They've all been good games for the most part. I think there was one where Boston crushed them. But for the most part, they've been good. And it's fun to... They're both very skilled teams.
And it's great because you never, ever know what you're going to get when it comes to Freddie Anderson and Tuukka Rask. I mean, those two guys can make amazing saves, and they can let in floaters, and they can look like they have no idea what the hell they're doing. And I guess we're going to talk about Boston and Toronto
now. The second one, Rask let up last night. Did you see it?
It was the Marner goal, right?
Yeah, where he fanned on it. He, like, half-fanned.
I get it.
And it's a 1-1 playoff game.
I know, but I get that
season's on the line.
It's hard to, like, really figure out where the release point is on a backhand shot, and all the credit in the world to Mitch Marner for A, having the balls to do that in a playoff game, and B, figuring out that he could probably catch Tuukka Rask off guard. But I mean, you're a goalie in a 1-1 playoff game.
You can't
You're in it. You have the chance to go home and get a little bit of rest before the next series starts, and you let that in. It's not good. And
I think Toronto wins games.
I think they do, too.
They have all the momentum.
They've got the momentum. I mean, Austin Matthews had a couple of good moments in Game 6. Nothing crazy. Nothing that stood out. Mitch Marner was obviously very good. Thomas Plantz was really good. Nazem Kadri has come in.
I've been impressed with Kadri.
Very effective off of his suspension. I think he's got something to prove, not just to himself, but to his teammates. He's playing a very effective brand of hockey, making really good plays up and down the ice. I don't know. I like Toronto in Game 7.
Yeah. What I saw was it was 3-1, and in Game 5, Toronto won, but they probably shouldn't have. Boston outplayed them, and Toronto somehow stayed alive. And I felt like Boston, after Game 5, even though they'd gotten it to 3-2, Boston still felt like, hey, guys, we're better than them. Like, no worries. Like, we're going to be all right. And in Game 6, Toronto looked like clearly the better team. They clearly outplayed them. So now all of a sudden, you're Boston. It's going back to Boston. You're like, you just got dominated, essentially. Well, it was only 2-1, and then they get the open empty netter. But, like, I felt like Toronto controlled that game.
And the best line for Boston in Game 5 and Game 6 has been their fourth line.
Yeah.
They've gotten nothing from Bergeron, nothing from Marchand. I mean, nothing really substantial.
Well, we keep waiting for it, and it just isn't coming.
It's not coming. So, and it's not because Toronto's defense is that good.
Not good at all.
I think a lot of it has to do with Nazem Kadri coming back in, and he can play that shutdown agitator third line center type of role.
And Anderson has played really good the last two games.
He has, although you look at Anderson, and again, you take a shot from the red line on Anderson. I legitimately think it's 50-50 to go in.
He doesn't
look like a goalie that has a ton of confidence.
You don't trust him going into Game 7, but he has played really well the last two games, and I trust him more than I trust Rask right now.
That's a very fair point. So, Game 7, who wins? Toronto?
Toronto.
I like Toronto, too. You think it's going to be close?
I do. I mean, this series has been good.
Yeah.
Let's get a Game 7 overtime to just wash all of the just horrendous first-round play
crappiness away from the first round.
If we could get, like, a double overtime Game 7, Toronto and Boston, just madness, I feel like we would almost forget about the entire awfulness of the first round, and we can just start fresh in the second round, which, by the way, has four great matchups regardless of who wins that game.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. So let's jump back to Winnipeg and Nashville. Now, a lot of people think that this is Nashville's series to lose. I don't know that I see it that way, mainly because we've already talked about it. The goaltending has been awful. I mean, really historically bad in this first round. And while Connor Hellebuck had some bad moments, I think that Hellebuck's bad moments are nowhere near Pecorine's bad moments. And Pecorine is awful. Awful on the road, and I think Winnipeg has one of the best home ice advantages in the league.
Just watching the playoffs, and it's tough to get a sense of how loud a place is.
Mm-hmm.
Just watching it on TV, but I get the feeling that Winnipeg's probably behind T-Mobile only. Like, I think Winnipeg might even be crazier than Nashville.
And they
are enjoying the hell out of this run.
And Winnipeg's building, I don't know the capacity on it, but I believe it's a smaller building. So you've got all those fans concentrated in a smaller setting. I mean, they're craving this. Patrick Laine's been good. Blake Wheeler is really good. I mean, Dustin Byfuglien, Tyler Myers, these guys on the back end that can move the puck out of their zone. They're big. They've got heavy shots. I don't know that this is a cakewalk for Nashville.
I don't think it's a cakewalk at all.
I don't know that I look at them in their favor.
I think it's a complete coin toss.
Yeah.
I'll give Nashville a 51% chance just because they've got Game 7 at home if they need it.
And let's talk really quick about the Colorado series with Nashville. It took until Game 6 for the defense of Nashville to score a goal.
Yeah, and that's what they rely on.
And that's their bread and butter. Like, and I want to say that the same thing happened at some point in time last year in the playoffs. What is it about the playoffs and Nashville's ability to score from the back end that just doesn't equate?
I don't know. I think part of it is Colorado is not a great defensive team, but they've got so much speed. And the Colorado forwards are able to stay really close to the Nashville defenders when it's in the offensive zone. The Colorado forwards can stay really close because they're not worried about when Nathan MacKinnon goes out there to PK Subban. Like, MacKinnon's not worried that Subban's gonna, like, blow by him. Like,
right.
I'll just easily skate backwards and be fine with you.
Like, and it changes what Subban does. If he sees Nathan MacKinnon coming after a 50-50 puck, he might release and not pinch.
Exactly. I think Colorado's speed gave him a little bit of trouble, and I could see Winnipeg's speed giving them. I pulled up Winnipeg's stats for the year, and, man, they are just so stacked at the top, their forwards. Blake Wheeler with 91 points. Obviously, he was arguably one of the – I don't think he's a top five, but he's a guy that you could argue to be up there for the heart.
You put him top 10, right?
Oh, for sure.
Top 10 for sure.
Then you got Patrick Laine with 70. Nikolai Ehlers with 60.
Mm-hmm.
Scheifele with 60 in 60 games.
Yeah, I mean, if he was healthy.
Kyle Connor with 57. You got defense. You got Dustin Byfuglien with 45. Brian Little, who nobody talks about, They've got so many guys on this team. They are dangerous.
It's top end scoring talent in Line A. It's grittiness. It's toughness. And I know that we talk about those intangibles, but it's going to matter because there's a little bit of chippiness with Nashville. There's chippiness with PK Subban. Mm-hmm. Ryan Johansson likes to play on that edge. They've got Ryan Hartman in the lineup who likes to play on that edge. And those are things that can't be kind of swept under the rug. These are two teams, and we talked about a little bit with what we thought San Jose and Anaheim would be, a couple of prize fighters just punching each other in the face.
Yeah,
this one's going to be that, but with actually really good hockey playing as well.
Dustin Byfuglien is what Ryan Reeves fans in Vegas want Ryan Reeves to be.
Mm-hmm.
He is that guy that you can't screw with anyone on the ice while he's out there. But he's also a really freaking good hockey player. Like he, like I said, he had more than 40 points. For a guy his size that's, mm-hmm. that's a physical bruiser, a guy like that, to score that many points, I mean, he is a great hockey player. And he's – how old is he? He's getting up there, right?
I think he's still under 30.
Really?
I think he is.
He was with Chicago during their Stanley Cup run, right?
Yeah, but I think he was only a couple of years in the league at that point.
But anyways, he is going to be a force in this series. I tell you right now, there are going to be a couple Dustin Byfuglien hits on somebody where it's going to be the highlight of the game over any of the goals. Like, he is going to lay some people out.
And I guarantee you, if Ryan Hartman tries to go cross ice and hit somebody in the head, he's going to wish he gets suspended immediately. He's going to wish that Dustin Byfuglien isn't on the ice because he'll have to answer for it on the ice, for sure.
That series is going to be so much fun. That, like I said it before, the playoffs, that could be the series of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Better than the conference finals, better than the cup final. That could be the best series we see.
Now, we both chose Nashville in this series, in seven. I'm sticking with seven because I don't see a way in which this doesn't go seven.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be back and forth.
And I still think... I mean, I can't go against what I picked. I'm still going to go Nashville, but it wouldn't surprise me one bit to see Winnipeg win this series.
No, not at all. No, and I'll pick Nashville too, just because I think if their defense gets going, mm-hmm. because they obviously have scoring with Forsberg and everybody and Arvidsson in the front.
Yeah,
if they get their defense going too, it's too much.
And they're deep too. Like if there's an injury to the one of the bottom six forwards, they can plug in some guys that have a lot of experience in the playoffs. So
I mean, Mike Fisher's their fourth line center, right?
I know. Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah. And they eliminated, I want to say that Hartman didn't play and Hartnell didn't play in the elimination game.
Yeah.
Bonino's been amazing. Kyle Turris has been really good, but he hasn't scored.
So
I mean,
many guys.
They're so deep, it's ridiculous.
They are. Their roster is similar to the Golden Knights in that, like, every guy that they put in is great. And then they've got guys that are healthy scratches like Tatar. Nashville has the same thing. Plus, they've got the top-end PK Subbans of the world that the Golden Knights don't have, at least yet.
Sure.
Nashville's just so good.
Yeah. So, Toronto-Boston versus Tampa Bay. Obviously, we don't know who it's going to be, so we're not going to get crazy in depth with this. But is there an easier matchup for Tampa Bay out of those two teams?
Toronto, for sure. They struggled against Boston all year.
Yeah.
I still think they're better than both. I mean, you had Tampa losing to New Jersey, right?
Yeah, I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
Well, I was just taking a stab at something that might happen. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, but it's fine.
Don't want to go all chalk. But I just think Tampa's so much better than... I don't even think that New Jersey series was 100% of Tampa Bay. I feel like Tampa Bay, getting back to how we started this podcast with cats.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay right now is a cat playing with its food.
I get the analogy. I do. And the big part for me with Tampa was Andrei Vasilevskiy. And while he didn't have to be incredibly good against New Jersey, because let's be honest, it's Taylor Hall and nobody else.
Yeah.
I was impressed that he was able to kind of turn it on a little bit, get to a little bit of a next gear, and I'm not so concerned about Vasilevskiy. It'll be interesting to see how he does against, you know, a team like Boston or a team like Toronto that have more than just one guy, one line, maybe a couple of pieces on the back end that can put the puck toward the net in dangerous scoring chances. But I think Tampa was just going through the motions toward the end of the season, and I didn't believe that that was happening, and I was wrong.
I think, yeah, I think they're good luck to any. If Pittsburgh gets there, we can get straight to that series then.
Yep.
Pittsburgh is playing better than anyone in the league right now, right? Am I wrong?
Are we completely glossing over Pittsburgh, Washington as a series that we have to talk about?
No, that's the series I was going to talk about. But I'm saying, is there a team in the NHL right now? And remember, the Sharks and Golden Knights both swept their series.
Mm-hmm.
Neither was as impressive as what the Penguins just did to the Flyers.
I mean, they're...
Sidney Crosby's got like 45 points.
Yeah, now it was impressive.
Or 12.
No, he's got 13. 13 in six
Jesus
games.
Christ.
Six goals and seven assists or something like that. Something ridiculous. Six and eight. I don't really know. I mean, the guy continues
and
to do
Malkin
ridiculous things.
And Malkin is playing amazing. Kessel.
And they scored eight goals without Malkin in the lineup in the elimination game.
I'm telling you, that team.
So looking at Pittsburgh and looking at the losses that they had against Philadelphia, and then looking at the fact that they scored eight goals in an elimination game, and it was still marginally close. I mean, what Pittsburgh is doing on offense is great.
Matt Murray sucks.
But Matt Murray has been atrocious.
He's not good.
He's been really bad.
He's been what Matt Murray is, which is bad. He's not a good goalie.
And let me juxtapose that real quick with Braden Holtby, who didn't start the series against Columbus. Philip Grubauer did.
Until
it was like, oh, hey, we should probably start a guy that won the Vezina before.
Our starting goalie.
Let's start our starting goalie in the playoffs.
I had this argument with Clayton and Frank on one of the Golden Knights pregame shows when they were doing like a scoring update. And they're like, oh, there's a goalie controversy in Washington. And I'm like, how is it a controversy? He had a bad week.
Yeah.
He's still your starting goalie.
No,
there's a reason he's the starting goalie, because he's better.
You and I had the same argument with those two guys, because I remember there was a time where it was coming down the final stretch of the regular season, and they were like, oh, well, you know, they got to start Philip Grubauer, got to start the hot hand. I'm like, listen, if Washington's going to do anything in the playoffs, it's going to be because of Braden Holtby.
Yeah.
It is not going to be because of Philip Grubauer. It's just not going to happen. There's no way.
So they started Grubauer two games, went down 0-2. They were like, oh, let's play our real goalie, our starting goalie, and then win four straight.
And he was exceptional.
He was good.
He was really good.
Yeah.
So.
And you know who wasn't good?
Who?
My boy, Bob.
I mean,
Sergei Bobrovsky.
Look at the team in front of him.
Sergei Bobrovsky has played 23 playoff games
in his
career.
It's bad.
Check us out. 23 playoff games. Mm-hmm. In 21 of them, he's given up at least three goals.
Yeah, that's not good.
Twice in 23 games, he's given up fewer than three goals.
I think he's like just at a 9-something save percent, like a 9-1 save percentage.
And you're right. The team in front of him is hanging him out to dry just on a regular basis.
Yeah.
But I don't care. As a goalie, I've had games where, like, I'm getting hung out to dry and we're losing, I don't know, 6-2 or something. I'm just getting shredded.
Mm-hmm.
But it's on me because I can still make the save.
Right.
That's why I'm there. The reason you are there as a goalie is for when they screw up, you save their ass. That's if you look up like it. That should be the definition of a goalie.
Yeah.
Like what does a forward do? He scores. What does a defenseman do? He defends. What does a goalie do? He saves their asses after they screw up. That's what a goalie does. And now, can he do it every time? No, but he doesn't do it enough in the playoffs. He does it in the regular season. That's the thing. They were hanging him out to dry all regular season too.
I think teams can figure him out over the course of a 7-game series.
I don't know what it is.
There's something there though.
I feel like I want to say it's him playing worse and not teams figuring him out.
Mm.
But I honestly don't know what it is, because he's a great goalie. I love watching him play, and he's just not the same in the playoffs.
No, he isn't. And that's unfortunate, because you look at some guys that kind of run into that. Man, they can never get it done in the playoffs, and you wonder what it is, because there's you can't look at anything that's happening tangibly to say he's doing that differently, and therefore that is why other teams are scoring. You can't do it.
And he wasn't really giving up soft goals, but like I said, it's just he makes those spectacular saves in the regular season and then just doesn't for whatever reason in the playoffs, and that's why they're the new Capitals.
So. Let's take a look at the Capitals versus the Penguins, third year in a row. Any reason to believe that this is different than last year and the year before.
Yeah, because this time I don't think it'll be competitive. The last couple years,
But Alex Ovechkin showed up in an elimination game and he scored two goals, and Washington was down 2-0 and they came back and they stormed the series against a crappy team.
I don't think Washington's very good.
I don't either.
I think yes, it will be different because the last two years, the Capitals have given fans and given just people in general that don't like the Penguins, which is everyone that's not a Penguins fan, basically, have given people hope that they're going to do it. This year, I don't think there's going to be any hope. I think Crosby scores four goals in the first game, and it's just a laugher, and this team has no, yeah. If now, because we're finally counting Washington out, they're probably going to win the series.
I've been saying it all along since I spitefully picked the Columbus Blue Jackets over the Washington Capitals because I swore I would never pick them again. Like, this is the year they're going to win the Stanley Cup. It just is. Yeah, in spite of the fact, like, it's probably the worst team that they've had that's contended for the Stanley Cup, and they're probably going to get far. I
think Pittsburgh smokes them.
I think they do too. I think that it's going to be closer because Matt Murray is not very good.
Yeah.
On a game-to-game basis, but I don't think it's going to be that close. I think it's probably going to be a 5-game series, maybe a 6-game series if Washington is lucky.
It's funny that Matt Murray's been so bad, but yet he's tied with Fleury for the most shutouts in the postseason with two.
Well, I mean, you play 6 games, you get 2 shutouts, but then you allow like 35 goals in the other 4 games.
Yeah, he's not been good.
It's not good at all. I mean, and especially, like, let's just take a moment. Just a moment to applaud Sean Couturier. I mean, it's stupid to play with a torn MCL.
Yeah,
I think it's
a hat trick
dumb. But he scored a hat trick and assisted on the other 2 goals that the Philadelphia Flyers scored.
With no knee.
I mean, if I'm the Philadelphia Flyers, I trade Radko Gudas. I bury him in the minors. I do whatever I need to do just get Radko Gudas away from anybody that is good at playing hockey.
When you said bury him in the, I thought it was you were going like in the desert or in the mountains.
He's not a good just hockey player.
Just bury him in the mountains.
Like again, I still don't understand how you can hurt your best player in practice by being unaware that there's a drill happening around you.
Yeah, that's because they're the Flyers. And they're playing against the Penguins, and they just can't beat Big Brother.
I agree with you. Now, real quick, because we're running up against it, we've got very limited time.
Let's end this podcast with just the creepiest thing you'll ever hear.
So, it was Craig Leupold is the owner of the Minnesota Wild. The Minnesota Wild got bounced in the first round by the Winnipeg Jets, and Chuck Fletcher, their GM, was not extended. Therefore, the search is on for a new GM that can figure out how to not trade away and give away assets at an expansion draft. Leupold gave a very interesting comment about his team and where they are development-wise. He said, you know, they're a good team, but they're not good enough right now. What's defined as good enough? You know, I guess it's like pornography. When you see it, you know it. Explain to me what the hell that means.
He's referring to, and I remember going over this case in journalism class, in one of my journalism classes at UNLV, because he's referring to a case in which someone was trying to define what is allowed, what's explicit, what's not, and there was a court case, like this is like way back. And they're trying to define what is pornography.
Sure.
And in the courtroom, the lawyer famously said, like, this is an actual, like, historic quote. He said, there is no definition for pornography, but when you see it, you know it.
Okay.
But why you would want to, it has nothing to do with what he's talking about. So why you would want to bring up pornography and what, like, just such, like, it makes, even if it made perfect sense, even if the analogy was great, I would still avoid using the word pornography to describe my team.
From porn and assessing.
So
my
for
team,
him yeah. to go out of his way with a horrible analogy and just to use the word pornography, Does he have a Twitter?
I don't know. Let's look it up.
The greatest thing is when you like people don't realize that your likes on Twitter can be seen by other people. So I love it when like some famous person, I forgot who, it's happened to so many guys, but I'm blanking on who it is now. But like people will go to their likes and just it's just like nothing but porn.
Oh, nice.
Just like good. Nude pics. Jeez. And then like they get called out on it and they have to like delete their Twitter the next day. And I have a feeling that if that owner does have
a Twitter,
his likes are all porn.
So speaking of Twitter, Jesse, where can people find you?
At Jesse Granger _.
We're going to end it on a low note with the pornography stuff. I'm at Ryan Hockey Guy on Twitter. Follow us, like us, subscribe on iTunes. Make sure that you're listening to the podcast because it's good and we are awesome. And Jesse hates people, but he loves cats. Until next time, we will talk to you later.